welcome to Tales from the Fog. I'm your host, Casey, and with me, as always, is the wonderful and awesome Veronica.
Hey, everybody.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Nice, busy day, busy week, busy month. It's been a busy, busy time.
We have been busy, so we're just pretending that today is May 32nd.
May 32nd.
And we're going to make our May podcast, so there you go.
I think that that's a great idea. I mean, the month of May was great to us, and it was a lot of new experiences, new scheduling, new switching of things, and learning how to function in that gig life. But the other side of it is time management, and we're still figuring it out. And finding time that we can spend together in the same room has been kind of hard.
Unless we're sleeping.
Yeah, even then, it's kind of like you're sleeping at different times than I'm sleeping, and
yeah,
our dogs don't know what to do.
Yeah, they're confused as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of got the opportunity, I guess, to start a new line of work. And it's something that kind of lines up with what I've done in the past. And now it kind of started with one gig, and now it's kind of exploded into what a crazy month of May.
I feel like you're selling yourself short. Because you didn't kind of have the experience to do this. You've worked inadvertently your whole life since you were a teenager towards this goal, even if you didn't mean to.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, is like you have an idea in your head of what you want to do when you grow up, kind of, you know, like I've always wanted to work, build haunted houses, mm-hmm. work in the haunted attraction industry, or maybe the themed entertainment industry where you work on stuff like Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which just opened. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I have been working towards that. And what inadvertently kind of happened is eventually you get an opportunity to do something, and it kind of takes all the experience that you have and puts you in a completely different direction that you didn't really see coming. And yeah, so, I mean, I could talk about a couple of the gigs I did because they're not all NDA'd.
Tell us about what, like, the overarching thing of what it is that you're doing and how you're getting the work and how you found it, and then go into some of the stuff that you've worked on.
Well, I found it because of Steve-O, former Decay. Well, I guess he's still a Decay Brigade member, but he's so busy he doesn't perform with the group anymore.
Yeah.
I was talking to him at one of our Decay Brigade meetings, and I was kind of telling him, you know, I didn't really like the job I had, and I was kind of looking for some, and he gave me some advice and some places to kind of look for that information. Like that stuff. And this one company I went to, I don't know if I should say the name of the company.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Just in case.
But this one company I went to, they had a really good meeting with the owner. And, you know, I kind of was like, not. So my skills and what they do are kind of cross, but they are starting a new department of carpenters, which they had never done before. They mostly work in building venues for concerts. So like trusses and doing lighting and things for like Coachella and EDC and places like that, where it's more, if you have two wrenches, you can put it together, mm-hmm. and it doesn't take really much of a mind to do it. You know, you just put bolt and hole, tighten down, you're good to go. but they wanted to start this new side, which is like construction carpentry, where you actually like have to know how to do actual carpentry and know how to use tools and things like that. And
like custom pieces for certain clients and stuff like that.
And so their very first gig was, they put me on it. I wasn't like in charge of it, but they threw me on it. The first construction carp gig that they got, which was a esports arena for this, client called NAB, which is the National Associations of Broadcasters, and their job, basically this esports arena was there to kind of tempt executives at ABC and NBC and things like that to try to air these esports on mainstream networks. And part of that was we built an esports arena, and they actually had what they called the esports experience at this conference, where they teamed up executives with professional players, and they actually competed in a tournament to try to get them excited about the experience. And then from that, I got another gig working at the Blizzard Arena, And now I've sort of become the go-to guy for esports arenas.
Well, it's an interesting, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, but there's a combination of the stuff that you've done where you're mixing different mediums and you've got like carpentry mixed with metalwork and aesthetic designs and then putting it all together in a certain way that does directly feed into how the esports arena comes together.
And you've got all that technology. I'm certified in IT.
Yeah. So see, like all the stuff that you've done in your past just happened to all kind of mush together to be perfect for this. And you're into video games. You know, you're still compared to a lot of carpenters, you're on the younger side, and you get where these kids are coming from. And then it's an area that you're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you're also a nice person to be around, and you are good at seeing what needs to be done and doing it. And you're good at telling people how to, you know, telling people what to do without telling them what to do.
Yeah.
You know, you're just naturally that way. And I think that this company and, you know, hopefully others as well are going to look at you and be like, this is more than just a dude who knows how to use a skill saw.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're useful to them and beneficial to them in so many more ways. And like having a niche like the esports arena, I mean, that's just one thing that you're going to be super good at. You're going to be doing rigging. And then, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. Who knows the kind of things that you're going to be working on?
Well, the biggest one by far, I can't talk about one that I'm doing currently, but the biggest one so far was working with Christina Aguilera, and I was the head carpenter on the build for her Las Vegas Experience, which is her, you know, Las Vegas show that she's doing.
Yeah, that's a hell of a thing, to be part of something with that many moving parts and to be so, like, crucial to that project.
And it was a huge build. We built everything on the Universal lot, and then we did the production rehearsals, and then we tore it out and put it in a bunch of trucks and sent it to Vegas. So
it's a really cool insight to see how those things get made, you know, because when you see them and they're done, all you see is this big, beautiful, finished thing.
Yeah.
But it's hard to kind of reverse engineer that in your mind of, well, who put that together? Who decided that the screens were going to go like this? How does it all click together? Because when you look at a car, you see a finished product, but it's hard to see past the outside of the car into all the different pieces and how they came together and who designed them and stuff.
Yeah.
And when I see a live stage show like that, I kind of get that sense that it always was. But this, you know, opportunity that you've gotten has, you know, for me being on the outside, seeing it in all its little parts. And like how you're saying you have to put this up before you put this part or this thing's going to fall down. Or, you know, you have to make sure that this is running in this way because it all has to connect together in a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see because you have to, like, the carpenters come in and we build a certain section. But then the electricians have to come in to run wires to that section before we can build the next section. Because everything is, like, very woven together. And, you know, after the electricians come through, the lighting crew comes in and puts in the lighting. And then we build the next part of it. And then it starts all over again. So it's really cool seeing how those things kind of all get put together. And then being in charge of a crew, especially on a gig like that where it's such a high-profile client, it's a little nerve-wracking at first. But, you know, her production manager was super cool. And he would always come in and just be like, everything going okay? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right, just keep going. Like, he was very supportive. So I don't know if he knew that I was quote-unquote new to the company. Like, I don't know how they hire us out necessarily, like if they say this is the person you want or these are the people we have with, you know, I don't know how you get those gigs. Like,
yeah, I was wondering that as well. Like, do they have a list of names and then attributes or feedback or
like I know for esports arenas they're basically like, we're sending you this guy now because I just got another one. And it's just like, you don't usually get the same kind of gig over and over unless you're the person there saying this is the one you want.
And I think that's pretty apparent because after you did one of the esports things, you were requested by name to come back.
Yeah.
I don't know how often that happens. I know that in the film industry, in general, it's referral base nearly 100%. Nothing's listed in, you know, to find a job. You have to know someone who will get you the job.
Yeah.
But this seems like you're part of an organization that shops you. I don't know if they shop you around, but, you know, they have contracts with these companies and they need something built.
Hula's building something over there.
So they need something built. They contact this company and that company has resources. You're one of those resources.
Yeah.
But now you're on a short list of people who they know that you are familiar with electrical because you knew, you rearranged the order of how things were built that one time to the point where you cut your build time in half. That's not trivial. That's thousands of dollars you're saving this company.
It was like $35,000. When you consider the labor costs and all that, yeah.
And that's a big freaking deal. And people who spend that kind of money on these events know that and they see it. So you, from day one, you built a reputation for yourself. And to now, like, that's your gig.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get better because now, I mean, you have the ability, which is nice, is you don't have exclusivity. So you have this company that, you know, you work for and they work for you. And you can be part of other companies that you work for and they work for you. And you also work for yourself. And you, you know, make these connections and you collect phone numbers and you give out your phone number. And then you are an active freelance member of the entertainment industry. Yeah. So it's, I mean, this is a, it's funny to see it all start to come together because we've both been peripherally involved in entertainment. Not even peripherally for you. You've been much more involved than I have. Yeah. But as far as like film production and live events and things like that on the grander scale, we have kind of been on the outskirts. But this is the first time that one of us has really been in it.
Yeah. And it's a different aspect of the entertainment industry than I expected to work in. But it's
Cool. You've done in front of the camera and you've done haunted stuff. And I think the haunted attraction industry, while part of the entertainment industry, I still consider it kind of an arm of it. I don't think of it as like, you know, productions and sets and commercial and film and, you know, and documentary and that kind of thing, like more film production type of stuff.
Yeah.
But it is entertainment. But this is, you have the opportunity to do all of that. You're on film sets. You know, you're probably going to be on a commercial set. You've done the esports arena. You've done live events. Like anything that needs somebody to build something, you have the opportunity to be a part of that.
Yeah.
So you have found the common, like, bone structure of everything in entertainment, which is you need a set.
Yep.
So you're in that, which means you can be part of anything in the entertainment industry.
Yes. The thing I'm working on now, at least for another 2 weeks, maybe. I can't remember when it ends.
I think you have another 2 weeks.
I think it's another 2 weeks. It's freaking amazing.
And big and huge and NDAs.
Super high profile. Bigger client than Christina for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's different.
Yeah.
Again, looking at those different legs of the entertainment industry, this is a completely different one. But it's a big one.
Yeah.
And it'll be seen by millions.
It's legit set building, which is awesome. Like, it's awesome.
And for being able to transition into being a freelancer 100%, which is ultimately what you're going to end up doing, this kind of gets you those connections to start doing that. Builds your resume. You know, makes you familiar with all the different kinds of things that you might need to do. And then that's not even including all the stuff you've already done. I need a pony wall. I need, you know, a mechanism that does this. And like, it could be something that you've already done in your home haunt or doing something with Huntington Haunt. Like, there's so many things that you've already done. You have no idea when it's just going to come up and be like, oh my gosh, I've done this already.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you can hear it in the way that I talk about it. I'm so freaking proud of you, and I'm so excited to see what you do with this.
It's pretty awesome. I can't wait to see what else I get to do.
It's the possibilities are endless. And because you're nice and smart and can put sentences together, people are going to keep hiring you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you weren't as good at building or whatever, even though you are, if you weren't, they would still want you back.
Yeah.
Because you're just nice to be in the same room.
Well, here's like the thing, like I found out that I was actually taken off of the production rehearsals for Christina Aguilera because they needed me on another gig. So it was supposed to be on Friday, and they were like, we can't replace you. We need you on this gig on Friday. And I was like, okay. So they took me off of the Christina Aguilera thing. They actually moved the production rehearsals to Thursday so that I could be there.
They switched the schedule so that you could be there.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I just thought they were doing it more than one day. But no, they pushed it back a day so that I could be on set.
Holy cow. That's a big deal. Yeah.
Well, me and the production manager got along like super well. Which I think he was just like, no, I don't want anybody else, maybe. I don't know.
Does he have your number?
I think he does, yeah.
I have a feeling you're going to hear from him again.
Yeah, maybe he'll send me to Vegas. Well, maybe the show that started yesterday, I think.
All right, that would be freaking hilarious if you ended up back in Vegas after all this.
Yeah. Well, it's only, I think it's only she runs for 2 or 3 weeks, and then she does a European tour, and then she comes back and does a couple more weeks.
Okay. I thought she had a residency. Like, I thought she was going
to. It is a residency, but she has a tour in between.
Oh, okay. Neat. So that set's going to be all over the place.
I don't know if she's taking the Vegas set. It might be a different tour set. That's a big set to try to fly to Europe.
Ugh, yeah. Do you think they'll have it built in Europe?
They'll probably have a different set, I would think.
What about the dancers and stuff? Do you think they'll move that whole production over there?
No, because it's a separate kind of show.
Oh, so it's a completely different thing. Neat. Cool, man.
So that's what I've been up to. What have you been up to?
Nothing nearly as exciting. Actually, nothing nearly as exciting. I got a side hustle about a month ago doing entertainment for children's parties, which I found out is actually a really common thing for actors, struggling actors, if we're going to be frank about it, to get side work while they're auditioning and everything during the week. I happened into it because a friend of ours, Char, who we worked with at Coffin Creek, and who now is a very strong slider. She's getting really good, and she's growing really quickly, and I'm very proud of her. But she had this gig, and she was telling Casey about it. Casey told me about it, and so I ended up doing some of this work. So I've had the opportunity to dress up as Minnie Mouse and Baby Shark and
Wonder Woman.
I was Wonder Woman. That was the most fun so far, even with the wardrobe malfunction. I didn't show anybody my tatas, but I came really close. Today I'm going to be Black Widow. What else? Woody. That was my least favorite one so far, was Woody.
That hat, the head is just horrible.
It was so claustrophobic, and it made me break out, and it was icky. But it was, you know, some nice side hustle cash, and it was so fun. I love hanging out with kids, and it's basically an opportunity to just play and be a child for however long they'll have me. And I'm in costume, so it's not even, you know, it has that instant protection of your tender ego against the world, is when you're in costume, you hide that, and you don't, it's like you're in disguise, so they don't know who you really are. Even if they could see your face, there's something about being in costume that makes it so much easier to deal with the world. So it's so much fun, and I love it. I went to Lancaster a couple of weeks ago, or last week or something. So from here, it's a two-hour drive to go out there and hang out with kids for 2 hours and paint their faces and teach them how to swing poi. But everyone had such a great time, and they already want me to come back for their next year's birthday party.
Wow.
Lord knows where I'm going to be in a year. Yeah. But, like, you know, of course you just smile and nod and say, that's great. Thanks. You have my number, you know, give me a call. So that's been my fun little side hustle there. Is there anything else I've been doing? I haven't been doing much ninja because shoulder.
Been rock climbing.
We have been rock climbing. Yeah, that's bouldering. Fun. Getting pretty good. We started a challenge where we did all of the VB, which is like beginner or warm up or whatever. And we did all the routes that were that grade. And then we went to V0, which is probably a little bit more challenging. I think just the holds are different, but just as easy. And then we did all of those in the gym. And then we did all of the V1s. And it was a little bit harder and embarrassing. Like, how come it's hard? Because we've been climbing threes and fours.
Yeah.
But it was challenging also because we were getting tired. And then we got to twos, and then we started falling.
Yeah.
But you know, challenge accepted. We did our best. That was really fun. We got to do that again.
So how about some Halloween news?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
All right. So we got some Midsummer Scream updates. It's been a while since we've been able to do our podcast, but they announced that they're going to have the 50th anniversary of the Haunted Mansion panel. They're going to have a bunch of people that worked on it or were part of the production of the Haunted Mansion, which sounds awesome.
50 years. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hate to be so morbid about it, but I have to imagine that a couple team members have passed on since that happened.
Yeah, I think a few of them have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many, who's going to be there?
I didn't write it down. Oh. Like, I'm supposed to be prepared or something.
Oh, I don't know. We did, or Rick West did a Periscope or a Instagram or something like that where he was talking to people and he was talking about it. Yeah. And he was mentioning names, and I'm not good at remembering names anyway, but names I'm not familiar with, definitely not going to retain that information. Yeah. But I, you know, seeing people respond to him talking about it, there was just so much love, so much adoration for the people who are going to be part of this.
Yeah, it should be really cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's going to be a Charlie Phoenix Halloweenland retrospective, which I don't know. Do you know who Charlie Phoenix is?
No.
So he's kind of like a comedian, and he did a thing. I saw it a long time ago where he did a bunch of stuff about roadside attractions.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's just like a funny oddball take on these weird things. And so he's going to do a version of that, but for the history of haunted houses and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So that should be really cool.
That's incredible. So is he going to capture them like in time, like Knott's Berry Farm in 1973 kind of thing? Yeah,
like that's what he does. He goes back and he researches all of this stuff and he puts together like a slideshow. And then he does like his thing to the slideshow. And
it's as super... if he visited it at that time.
I don't know. I can't remember how exactly his perspective on it is. But it's usually a lot of fun.
That sounds great. So did he say what kind of, like what attractions he's going to
visit? No, it just says a Halloween retrospective.
Ooh, it'd be cool if he ends up in Salem.
That'd be fun, yeah. That's a big part of Halloween.
But I mean, Southern California alone has so many things that have been going on for so long.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun. What else you got?
BuzzFeed Unsolved is going to be there.
That's pretty fun.
Which is awesome. They're really cool.
That's really tapping into like what the kids are into these days. And like it's...
like the mysteries and stuff.
Just having BuzzFeed.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are they going to... what mysteries are they going to
do? I don't know. It didn't really... I don't think it said. It just said they were going to do a panel.
That should be interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're always good at mining content out of nothing.
Yeah.
So... either way, it'll be entertaining.
And then they announced, I think the newest announcement is that the producers and directors and choreographers of Creep and the Willows are going to be doing a panel on the productions and how they work.
Oh, cool.
Which is really cool because they're very interactive experiences. And so I think that'd be a cool thing to kind of figure out how they put those layers together.
So for someone who wouldn't be familiar with that, what is Creep and the Willows?
They're like interactive play haunts, I guess. They take, it's very, very story driven. And your experience of the event is basically how much you put into it is how much you get out of it. So it's one of those things where you really need to interact and with the characters and get information about what's going on.
That'll be really interesting. Have they kind of touched on that aspect of the haunted industry yet?
Last year, I think they had a panel about the generalization of how you go about creating an interactive thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've really done a deep dive on each person's job and how they all come together to do that job.
There's so many moving parts.
Yeah, you have like your director, your choreographer, the story writers, the actors, and they all have to come together to create something really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so how they work together and in what order and how they fuse it all is going to be interesting to find out.
Man, the trial and error in that must have been wild.
Yeah.
Like, and then having all those pieces be on the same page all the time,
mm-hmm.
and know what changes are introduced.
Like, how do you find actors to portray those characters? Because if you're going to have something that's that intensely story-driven, they have to be very strong actors, mm-hmm. and be able to improv and all of that stuff. So,
and know the story so well that no matter what is presented to them, they'll get to where they need to get to.
Yeah.
Oof. Well, is it in Southern California?
Yes.
Well, then, you know.
It's in L.A.,
they've got all the actors.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, you know, finding one that you can afford.
Yeah. Free, baby.
Free? No. You're not
going
to get anybody.
I'll just put it up on the Los Angeles casting board.
No. You'll get everybody.
You'll get Crafty.
You'll get, oh, yeah. You will be fed and I have IMDb credit.
Yeah.
Actually, you wouldn't get IMDb credit for that.
You would get IHHDB credit.
What's that?
Internet Haunted House Database. I just made it up.
I'm into it.
I just made it up. But sure. Internet
Haunted House Database. I thought they would get paid in experience bucks.
Yeah, you get experience, yeah.
Of course.
Which you can take to wherever.
Because mortgages are always paid in experience.
Yes.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's about it for new updates on Midsummer Scream. Tickets are on sale. I think the awesome pre-sale deal is over, but I'm sure there's coupon codes out in the internets.
We're still far enough away to where discounts are available, but the closer it gets, the closer to face value you will pay.
Yep.
So if you know you're going and you know if you've got someone who's part of a booth or someone who's in a show or, you know, someone who's going to be in there and you want to visit them or be part of it, you really should get your tickets now. You should have gotten them a month ago, but, you know, get them as soon as you can, because if you do wait, first of all, you have to wait in a really long line. That's not fun. Takes up most of your day. And then, yeah, like, it's just not a fun way to start any day.
I mean, that's the only, like, for me personally, because I don't care about the front of the line stuff, other than the VIP entrance at the beginning of the day where you get in an hour early and you don't have to stand out in the heat with all the other people for like 3 hours just to get into the con.
Yeah.
So it's worth paying the extra for the VIP just to get in to the building and the air conditioning way ahead of everybody.
It's still weird having never been part of that experience, because we get there at, what, 8 o'clock in the morning?
Something like that, yeah.
Sometimes we get there at 7:30 in the morning so that we can, like, go get breakfast or whatever. And we're there the whole day, and we're in our chairs getting makeup on. You're, you know, usually doing some kind of techie thing. And, like, we've never gotten to see what it's like
to be by the time we leave, all the traffic is gone, too. Mm-hmm. So,
totally. Yeah. The closest I think that I've gotten to it was being already, like, in makeup, totally ready to perform, and then going out early and messing in the line and getting to see people out there and, like, slide at them and stuff. But we're not even allowed to slide anymore.
Nope.
It has to be during a show. But that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want anyone getting hurt.
Yeah, so Midsummer Scream, go. Come and see us. It'll be awesome.
Looking forward to it.
Coming up so close.
Are we allowed to talk about the other thing yet, or is it still too baby brand new?
I would say we need to wait till after we take our trip there.
That's a good idea.
And then once everything is signed on the dotted line, we can talk about it.
Yeah, because we have no idea what we're doing. What the hell? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's for later.
Yeah. The next big announcement was by the Winchester Mystery House.
Say what?
The Winchester Mystery House.
Tell me more.
You know, it's up in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
They announced that they usually do a thing for Halloween, but this one sounds like it's going to be a much bigger production. They announced something called Unhinged.
Yeah.
And it's an all-new immersive horror experience, much like The Creep in the Willows, but inside the Winchester Mystery House.
Hell no.
And you're going to get to go into rooms that are usually off limits on the regular daytime tours. So part of it is going to be exploring new locations within the building. And they're all going to be part of this interactive horror experience.
Dude.
I know. It sounds awesome.
Yeah.
The tickets for that go on sale August 1st.
What are the dates that it's running?
September something through Halloween.
So, oh my gosh. So it's like a full run haunted event.
Yeah.
Neat. Did they get new, like, directors or owners or something? Like, what, why the change?
I don't know.
I'm glad they did.
Yeah. Sounds awesome. I mean, I would go up there and see it if we were invited.
I have not been there at all.
I have driven past it. My parents didn't let us go into it.
Aw.
Yeah, it was on the way. We were going down the coast.
We were going to go. Weren't we planning a vacation? And then we ended up changing our plans, but weren't we going to go there?
We were planning a vacation, but it ended up we went to Texas instead.
Oh, yeah.
So we just switched it
to
Texas. But, you know, that was still a fun trip.
Totally worth it.
The other big announcement was Sinister Point is going to do their bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be August, I believe it's August 3rd through September 15th or something like that. You have to get reservations, so you have to go on the website. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's kind of like one of those pop-up bars like the Cantina in L.A. And it's in Brea, so...
I'm impressed that they're able to still get an alcohol license in Brea.
Yeah, me too.
That's impressive.
Maybe they, maybe they put it in under someone else's name. We'll see.
Permits are hard. Just in general, getting a permit for anything is hard.
Permits are just crazy.
Yeah.
More announcements.
Wow.
The Bloodshed Brothers announced that they're bringing their haunt to the Day Out with Thomas. Okay. Not really Day Out with Thomas, but the Orange Empire Railway.
Yeah.
They are going to be bringing a haunted attraction to the Orange Empire Railway, which also hosts Day Out with Thomas.
That's wild.
Although, if they did a Day Out with Thomas, they do have like a haunted island movie, right? Like something about
I don't know.
Halloween thing.
They probably have Halloween movies.
Yeah. They do. I think I've seen it at the Frechette's house.
But I think that that's a great venue for a haunted attraction.
It's an amazing venue, depending on what they allow them to use.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they let them, like, route some people through some of those old, like, train cars, oh, my God, so awesome. But,
creepy.
Yeah, we'll find out more about that coming soon.
That's a great idea. Also, a great location, because not a lot of action goes on out there.
No, and there's a... decent sized market out there, so
there is, because isn't there like what the Desert Haunt
Desert Rose or something like that?
Yeah I mean, such a great opportunity to get haunts out there. You know, that's an underserved market.
Yeah, and it's not that far from us, so we could actually drive and visit.
No, and it's, I mean, for the haunted industry enthusiast, it's not that far anyway. Even if you lived in LA,
yeah,
you'd make that trek just to see something really awesome.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Yay, congrats, guys.
And now we get to the meat of our story.
I like meat.
We don't have a Nani Watches a video, which is kind of sad.
Aww.
So if you see any crazy fun videos that you want Veronica to destroy, you know, paranormal, Bigfoot, giant monster stuff, whatever it is, send it our way so Veronica can skeptically destroy it.
I'm the unfun skeptic.
Yep.
Invite me to every party.
HHN Hollywood, there's no new announcements, but the current lineup is Stranger Things, Holidays in Hell, and Frankenstein versus the Wolfman.
Cool.
What we are going to talk about is Universal Orlando.
All right.
And the controversy between Universal Orlando and Not Scary Farm. So,
I have words.
So there's more to this story. That you don't know. And I don't even think a lot of people know, because there's one unannounced maze that I'm privy to that's a rumor. I was going to call it a rumor.
Mm.
But we'll say it's 99.95% going to happen.
How are you privy to it?
I know people. Uh-huh. Right? I'm in the production world.
You know people that I'm like, how do you know this person?
All right. So Universal Studios Orlando announced an original house called The Depths of Fear.
Mm.
Which sounds an awful lot like The Depths at Not Scary Farm, which our friend John Cook designed. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well.
Now I'm going to, maybe before you say it, I'll preface it with saying that I do know that this attraction was going to be an IP attraction based on BioShock. And they got pretty far into the production when the IP fell through, because I guess they thought, oh, this is in the bag, because there's a new BioShock game coming out, and they're like, we got this.
Uh-huh.
And for whatever reason, at the last minute, they pulled out, so I don't know if the game's going to be delayed. Maybe that's a sign that maybe the game is going to be delayed
a
year or something. But they pulled out, and they were far enough into production where they were like, we don't want to waste all of this.
So they already had like set pieces and costume pieces and like,
I think, designed but not necessarily built. But then they'd have to go back and do something from scratch. So all they did was kind of repurpose everything that they worked on into an original story. Now, they could have come up with a better name.
That's basically what I was going to say. Like, I do know that originally it was going to be part of something else.
Yeah.
And I totally feel for them for that, and having to salvage something that you've already put so much money into.
Yeah.
Because I know that that's what this is about. It's usually, you know, how much something costs or, you know, not wanting to waste money that you've already spent on something. I get it. However, a quick little Google search or any sort of peripheral awareness of the haunted industry that you're part of could have prevented this from happening.
Well, you know they visit Scary Farm every year.
Oh, yes, we do.
So,
but we also know that Scary Farm visits them every year.
They don't even need to Google it. They probably went through it.
Everybody spies on everybody else.
Yeah.
We all know that it happens.
And the storyline is so close to that storyline that they decided to go with, you know, this mining company that's going under the ocean and things go crazy.
And the, like, I think is like the major difference, the fact that it's not a period piece.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, we don't know, really. It could end up being a period piece. Because BioShock is very period. So if they're going with those costuming.
You've got all this, these resources and all these brains coming up with all these amazing ideas for things.
Yeah.
No, but and think, okay, so you're in a room and you're pitching ideas, as you're wont to do when you're preparing a maze like this.
Yeah.
No one said, hey, that's already been done. What else you got? It's all it would have taken.
Yeah.
One thought of, someone did that already.
It's not that it's already being done. It's currently being done at another park.
And it's being done
well. So it's not like the Depths was at Knott's 10 years ago.
And at that point, you know what? It's kind of fair game.
It's like, it's currently an attraction
and
at another park.
It's not like it's a clown maze. It's not a vampire maze. Yeah. Like one of those really generic kind of ideas. This
It'd
is
be
pretty
like
fucking
when Carnival of Carnivorous Clowns came out and Universal was just like, hey, let's do a clown maze. They're like, let's call it Carnivorous Clowns. Like,
there's too many things that are on the nose for it to be, you know, an accident.
Yeah.
I mean, who comes up with something like that and how often? You know, like, I mean, John Cook comes up with these great ideas, and they're wild ideas, and he has so many of them. At some point, someone else is going to come up with it too, and it's going to be a matter of who puts it, who crosses the finish line first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I would imagine that's pretty normal when you're a creative in an industry. However, the fact that this has already been done, and it's been done well, and there's been, it's not just the haunt, they had, like, production footage released. They had interviews. I mean, we've seen videos of the making of this thing.
Yeah.
It has been so well documented that it is absurd to think that it's an accident.
Yeah.
So now you're left with, well, what recourse do you have? Do you just let them try it and make people compare?
Well, is the fact that they called it the Depths of Fear as opposed to the Depths, is that like the 10% difference that would then be like, oh, well, it's different?
Yo, I mean, depending on how much money they want to spend, you might have enough there for a lawsuit.
But, well, the thing is Knott's doesn't copyright the maze names. As far as I know, I've never heard of them copywriting anything. Universal does. And that's the reason why, like, Holidays in Hell is spelled with a Z, because you can't copyright holiday, but you can copyright holiday with a Z because it's not a real word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they do those weird things, and everybody's like, oh, Universal likes Zs, but it's because they copyright it.
So they've got the Depths. What's it called?
The Depths of Fear.
The Depths of Fear. I mean, are they going to try to copyright that?
I don't think they can, because they didn't use the Z thing.
So they can't copyright a phrase?
Yeah.
Because at that point, even, I mean, you'd have to prove originality, and you can prove that Knott's existed first.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it'd be a stupid play if they did copyright it and then told Knott's you can't use the name.
What sucks is, like, we have all these opinions, and, like, we know John Cook as a human.
Yeah.
So we have that extra emotional investment in it. And there's lots of haunted industry fans who really like his work. But we're not the decision makers. And we're still going to go and we're still going to see it.
Yeah.
So
it's
kind of like,
I've talked to a few fans of Universal Orlando that work in or that live in Florida. And the way that they see it is they hear about John Cook's mazes, right? But they know that they're probably never going to be able to come out to California to see them. So in their eyes, they're like, this is awesome, because if they're copying what John is doing, we're actually going to get to see something that's kind of like what his mazes are, and we don't have to go all the way out to California to see it.
Do we need to detangle all of that logical fallacy, or are we comfortable with that, with just knowing what it is?
Yeah, we just know it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Not a good excuse.
So let's talk about the controversy that will be coming.
Oh, shit, there's more.
There's more. unannounced maze for Universal Orlando. So we're just going to call it a rumor at this point.
Okay.
However, they are also going to be having an original IP called the Tooth Fairy.
Okay. I feel a little less buttered about that. the Tooth Fairy...
like two Knott's mazes.
Yeah, but that one is no longer current. And it's a concept that has existed for a very long time. And it's not an original kind of thing in like dentistry and fairy tale.
Yeah.
Things have, you know, been things that have been present in our subconscious for a long time. I feel less offended on behalf of the designers at Knott's for that one.
Now, we don't have the description, so because it's unannounced. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if it's going to be following the same idea of Daniel Miller's maze.
That's the risk that you take when you base a story and an entire venue on a concept that has existed for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with Pumpkin Eater. It's not an original idea. It's an original take on an existing idea.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, if they were to take something like that and just do a whole thing of like, you know, a whole thing of like fairy tale theater gone upside down, it's not, you know, you can't really say that they're copying anybody. They might be inspired by. It's not like The Depths of Fear and The Depths where you're not inspired by, you are ripping from.
Yeah.
But this is, it just seems like something inspired by. And it may take a totally different route than Scary Farm did.
Yeah.
Because you know, Scary Farm has an aesthetic and a vein that it tends to stay in, and stuff doesn't really veer too much out of that. And Universal has the same. So this might be a completely different, you know, visually, musically, you know, costume design, the elements that they decide to highlight, because we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a completely different thing.
Yeah.
And because it's an existing idea.
I just think it's funny that they have two mazes.
It is funny and bad form, and it does not look good, but it's a little less offensive.
Well, the thing with Horror Nights fans is the team running out of ideas? Because they've been at it for a long time and it's been the same team. So like at Knott's, the people kind of switch out. You get different maze designers and stuff, and they swap them out every once in a while. So you get that fresh blood coming in. But it seems like maybe the uni team might be running out of juice. Maybe it's time to mix it up a little bit, get some new blood in there.
You know, I know a really good maze designer. He's also in a band. They might want to consider hiring him.
That's weird. I'm not in a band.
You're a really good maze designer, too. But you got what I was thinking of. You know, imitation is indeed the most sincere form of flattery, as a lot of people have mentioned in this whole thing.
Yeah.
However, the individual responsible for the first one is for hire. He's available. Why don't you just hire him to do something for you?
I know, right?
Come on. You're going to spend the money anyway. Put it in the right place.
Yeah.
Give it to someone whose brain is amazing and you want to reward it. I mean, don't just steal from him. That's just not bad form.
Yeah. That being said, we're taking a trip to... No, just kidding.
I don't need to go to Florida. Ever.
Really? Because Universal Orlando is pretty freaking awesome at Halloween Horror Night.
Is it?
It's amazing.
Is it hot and sticky, though?
No, it's nice.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You talked me into it. Let's go.
All right, let's go.
Yay!
All right, so that's all I had. You got anything else going on?
Do you want to do a little Decade Brigade update?
Sure, you could do a Decade Brigade update.
Cool. If you can do me a favor and pull up the date of our open slide while I talk about what we've been working on. So the Decade Brigade sliding team, we've been building our shows for Midsummer Scream, and we're making some pretty good progress. We've already started work on our second show, which is going to be really fun and weird and different. The challenge that we have every year is coming up with something that pushes the envelope. And when you do that every single year, it makes stuff get, you know, progressively more difficult to, you know, to come up with new things and come up with new tricks and stuff like that. So we are truly doing our best to build those things up. And you can get... No, never mind. I was going to say you can get hints of that, but I don't think that's published footage. What's cool is our film production team has been putting out these... what is it?
Meet the Sliders.
Meet the Sliders. So you can get a video of a member of our team and kind of get a little bit of background on who they are, you know, like how they started and their role with Decade and different things like that. We've released a bunch of them so far, and we have a bunch more to release coming up. So stay in, subscribed to the Decade Brigade YouTube channel, yeah. and you'll get a notification every time a new video pops up. And also coming up on the Decade Brigade schedule is our next Slide with Decade Day.
Which and is June 13th at 5 p.m.
June 13th, Thursday?
Sure.
I don't know if that, it should be a Thursday. That's the plan anyway. So June 13th, 5 p.m., we're going to do another obstacle course. And of course, you know, the normal obstacles, you've got your limbos and your boxes and your hopper sticks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we really like the obstacle course because it forces you to combine stunt sliding with scare sliding in the way that you have to move your body around and the endurance factor. So it's an element that we hadn't really seen in sliding before. And, you know, we thought stunt sliding was pushing the envelope, but now combining it with an obstacle course has leveled it up in a big way that made it suddenly harder for even the best monsters that we have.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. It's
pretty fun to watch them struggle.
It's great. It's like, well, it's like watching a bodybuilder go through Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
You know, they're really good at certain things, but you take them out of that and put them into something else, and suddenly it's a little bit harder. So, you know, endurance isn't a strong suit for everybody.
Yeah.
We're not all runners like Ducky. You know, she could run that obstacle course all day long because that's what her body's used to. But I don't train like that. I tend to do more strength training and like HIIT training. I don't do running. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me. And like even our, you know, our distance record holder, you know, I think he was head to head with another kid who was running the course, and like they were like tied.
Yeah.
I mean, the results were fun. But we're going to do it again. It's going to be harder this time. A little bit refined engineering. I think I'm
working. Wait, it's 13th. They moved it up. I am going to be working that day, but at the Anaheim Convention Center. So I'll be close by. Closer. So I'll be able to sweep over after work.
Neat. So you'll have to delegate the obstacle course. Mr. Casey was the one who designed the obstacle course.
Last time, yeah.
Last time.
This time I might not, because I might be there after it starts. But we'll see.
I think that you should give someone else an opportunity to. I think you have a really good eye because you see what, you know, you see what the newbies are capable of and you see what the veterans are.
Yeah.
And you are obviously familiar with obstacle courses thanks to Ninja. Mm-hmm. So you have a unique way of combining everything, making it challenging but not impossible, and making it fun to watch.
Yeah.
Because like running it, you want it to be fun, but that's an experience for one person. Watching it, that's an experience shared by potentially hundreds of people. So like keeping that in mind, that's the difference between like if, you know, someone who is just sliding all the time, all I think about is sliding, all I do is sliding, and you know, designing a course might be completely different and not really fun to watch.
Yeah.
But someone who's into like designing entertainment, you know. Anyway, that's my perspective on that. So hopefully they keep that in mind when they design it this time.
Well, if you're there, you can help.
I won't be there because I won't be able to get there by 5.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but I'll be there.
Speaking of Ninja Warrior, they aired the Los Angeles qualifiers. Mm-hmm. And one of the obstacles that I, tested, mm-hmm. was on it. And I love this obstacle. It was the favorite thing I did. And I crushed it every time. And it took out over half the field.
How do you feel about that?
I'm kind of proud of myself that, like, yeah, I didn't even know. And it took out some big name ninjas, yeah, too. And I did not expect that because, to me, it was the easiest obstacle that we tested.
Do you think that height was a factor? Like the height of the athlete?
I don't know. Because we had people of all varying sizes. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us were able to do it.
In testing?
Yeah.
But we weren't there to see what the final arrangement of the obstacle was on site.
Yeah.
They may have made it a little farther, a little closer, a little higher, a little shorter.
It looks like they actually... So the one that we're talking about, what do they call it on the show? Diving board?
Something like that.
It's a teeter-totter. So you climb up this teeter-totter and it starts falling. Mm-hmm. And when it gets to a certain level, you just have to start running. And the bottom part of the bigger dipper, or the double dipper, what do they call it? Double dipper?
The dipper.
It's like this rail. It's like a...
It looks like a like a Nike swoosh.
Yeah, it's like a rail with a bar on it. Mm-hmm. And you jump and grab the bar and you slide down the slide and you have to jump off using the momentum of the slide. Mm-hmm. When we did it, I actually think it was farther away.
Oh.
I think it was 8 feet from the dive board. And in the show, they said it was 6 feet.
Oh.
So we actually had to run faster and jump farther to get it.
But what was the success rate when you were testing?
100%.
Everybody did it?
Everybody did it.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah. That's why we were like, that's probably why they put on the city qualifiers, because they're like, oh, this is an easy obstacle.
That's wild.
And it took out over half of the people.
So there were a couple of differences. One was the texture of the surface of the diving board.
I don't know, because I wasn't there.
But this one
but had, it's was a like little light different, up. Yeah.
And then what about the materials that the rails were made out of?
That's exactly the same.
Everything there was the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could have been.
But it's a different way of looking at obstacles. So ninjas are used to upper body strength, balancing obstacles. And this one was 100% about timing. Mm-hmm. You had to time everything perfect. And I don't know if ninjas ever had an obstacle like that. Because if it gets too far and if the diving board reaches 90 degrees, it drops out. Mm-hmm. So it just drops. And if you try to jump at that point, you have nothing to jump off of because the board falls out from under your feet. So you have to jump when it's still kind of at an angle. Mm-hmm. And then you also have to time when you need to start that run. Mm-hmm. Like how, because you can't do it when it's super steep because you're climbing up at a pretty steep angle. So you have to actually wait for it to drop to the perfect angle where you can get a sprint in to jump. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there was any obstacle where timing like that was an issue.
The only ones that I can think of are on Ultimate Beastmaster. They have the conveyor belt thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I don't think I've ever seen one in Ninja Warrior that was pretty much all timing because it's not physically demanding.
No.
In any way.
In the same way that the balance obstacles where you have to, like the diamond, the bridge and things like that, where it's not necessarily skill. It's just, it's like foot placement and agility, mm-hmm. where this is kind of like that. It is foot placement and agility, but timing is a really big part of it. And, well, let's see, because even the ones like the one with the crayon last year, that was a bit of timing because you slid down something and you had to release and then grab onto something else. And it's always about like
when you release. Well, that's like the double dipper too.
That has an element of timing, but the timing with that is usually about when you launch with your upper body from one thing to another. This is the first thing that I could think of where the timing is about what you launch from your lower body to the next part of the obstacle. The other things are like, you know, different parts of lachets and things like that. So timing is an element in a lot of it, but not in this combination.
Yeah. So it's fun. I was surprised that it knocked so many people out.
Yeah. I liked the shrinking steps. That's something that you train for a bit, but it tends to kind of get, it's not focused on heavily.
Yeah.
But as soon, I love the way that ninja gyms change. You can tell what obstacles are in the show based on how gym owners change all of their obstacles after they do the course.
Yeah.
Because you don't know about it until months later. Like, but you know, in the general audience.
Most of those obstacles will be back for city finals.
Yeah. But even so, city finals are recorded a couple days or a day after the qualifiers, mm-hmm. and they just don't air until seven weeks later after they go through the rotation. But what we see is like on, you know, we follow all these places and you see new obstacles coming up at gyms located all across the area, and they have new obstacles that you've never seen before, but they're not new to them because they saw them actually on the course. Like the shrinking steps.
Yeah.
That was an obstacle that was at qualifiers. And I didn't see it for the first time until weeks after they filmed qualifiers. And so when you started seeing it in actual gyms. So if you were paying attention, you could see, you knew what was going to be at the competition based on what you see in real time.
Well, I think they knew as well because one of the competitions in the games that they did, whatever, the one that aired first.
The All-Stars?
All-Star Games mm-hmm. is a shrinking steps race.
But even then, they're not privy to what it's going to be until that day.
Yeah.
But because there's such a delay.
That was filmed in Vegas not long after the finals last year. Oh, so yeah. They would have known about the shrinking steps. I don't know if they knew they were going to be in a course.
But every time they see a new obstacle, yeah. They put it in so that they can practice it. And it's just another way to train. It's just another variation on what is basically a balance and agility obstacle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a little bit of ninja fun stuff.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's it.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah. So like and subscribe on YouTube and all that stuff for the Decay Brigade. It's all Decay Brigade official. Mm-hmm. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Tales from the Fog. You can follow Veronica on Instagram at
Veronica Voices.
Rate us on iTunes and stuff. That's always fun. And I think that's it. So until next time, guys, we'll see you in the fog.
Bye, guys.
Bye.